We also bring you greetings in Jesus' name. Very thankful to be here again and really have been encouraged and renewed. We were a bit late in coming this morning. I don't like to be late, by the way, but this morning we were, and I heard the singing outside, and I wondered, well, what are they singing? I came closer and then opened the door and heard the words, and pray too for God's servants that they may declare the message of truth with an anxious desire that all may be kindled with heavenly fire. And that was affirmation. And then also the devotional. What Jonathan shared of the Beatitudes in Matthew 5 had so much to do with what I was wanting to preach about. And then what James said about this man who said he also believes in Matthew. And actually, what James mentioned there is in Matthew where he's talking about turning the other cheek also. It is in Matthew 5:39. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. And this man was saying, yeah, he turned to him the other cheek, but that's the last time. So he felt like, you know, yeah, that person had been had. You know, if he does it twice, I'll take it once. But twice over, and then he would settle that up. But is that what Jesus meant? We are sure it is not. We are sure it's not. I have been studying some on history. And of course, you've already heard how one thing that we don't learn from history is that we don't learn from history. It's in the history of mankind as they're coming down through that we don't learn from history. And I'd like to look at a certain man today that we read about in history and goes through his life, an experience that he had that I'm hoping will really speak to us today. The title for the message, I have titled it, Where Do You Stand? And you could say it is a non-resistant message. When I was young growing up, you know, we weren't all that non-resistant in looking back. The times us boys fought with each other. And I remember I really enjoyed going over to one of my cousins. He was my age and they were Amish. And he was talking about the war between the Jews and the Arabs at the time. And there were, you know, jets flying around and they were using ordnance and bombing and things. And he made the remark, some of the remarks he made, I just have not forgotten. I wish I could. And I know today that he would not feel that way. In fact, he'd hang his head in shame if he would know the things that he said. But he said he just wishes that these Americans would take those jets and just bomb those Arabs to bits. And there's one time, too, that he told me, that, you know, there is something that I like to do better than anything else I can think of. Something I like to do. And I asked him, well, what is that? And he said, "Es ist verzweigende Buhe watch a fecht. It is to watch two little boys fight. well, where was that coming from? It impressed me, but he is not that kind of man today. But what do we teach our children? What do we show them? What really is it to be non-resistant? And you know, in the warfare that is raging today, it seems to me so much of it is a spiritual warfare. But let's look at this man as lessons for the spiritual battles we face, and also recognizing that the time could come that we will be tried in a very literal sense, even as this man was. And the older I get and I see how things are developing in the United States, I can easier and easier see how things could descend into chaos to where us people would be severely tested in this very thing of being non-resistant. And his name is Jacob Hostetler, and I'm sure you've heard the story. But I'd just like to recount some of it again. And some of the details are a bit sketchy, but by and large, it's a true story. And it was in the year 1740. And remember, this was before the American Revolution, when they had won the revolution in 1776. So this was more than 30 years prior to that. There was one... it was during the French and Indian War. And what had happened, see, the British people were coming over from England, and they settled the eastern part of the U.S. And then it wasn't long till Amish started coming too. In the early 1700s, Amish started settling into the eastern United States. And Jacob Hostetler, he settled into what is known as Berks County, Pennsylvania, which is not really far from Lancaster County, but the way I take it. But the French and the British, they had an argument about different lands and so on. And so in 1740, the Amish that had come over, they had good relationships with their Indian neighbors. They lived amongst each other, and there just did not seem to be any problems. But then when the French saw how things were going in Britain's favor as far as settling America, they came over from Canada, down from Canada, and made the Indians believe that these people are taking advantage of them. And they made them dissatisfied and fed them these stories of what is happening, and got the Indians to think that they were being taken advantage of. So one evening, the youth had gotten together at the Jacob Hostetler home, and they had an apple snitzing, which is they got together to cut up apples. And then what the Amish would do is they would put a string through the apples, maybe with a needle or something, then hang them up to dry, to eat dried apples. Just as a means of food. Back then, of course, they didn't have modern conveniences like what we have, but they had gotten together and had the apple snitzing. They had a good time, and then everyone went to bed. And then the dog started barking. And young Jacob Jr., he got up to see what all the commotion was about. And in the family, there was Jacob and his wife. I'm not exactly sure what her name was, but then it was John and Barbara. They had had a married son and daughter. And then it was Joseph and Christian and Jacob Jr. and a daughter, which I'm not sure what her name was. But anyway, Jacob Jr. got up to see what was going on with the dogs, and when he opened the door, all of a sudden he felt a piercing pain in his leg. Looking down, there was an arrow protruding from his leg. He quickly shut the door and went back in. And when the others of the family, of course, they were up in a hurry and they saw what was going on, Joseph and Christian went for the fireplace to take down the rifles. When Jacob met them there and he said, boys, no, we can't do this. Jesus said in Matthew 5, Jesus said that you shall not resist evil. And this is wrong to fight against the Indians. We cannot do that. Now, what would we do? The younger boy with an arrow sticking out of his leg, or maybe they had pulled it out or whatever, they were trying to help him there, wrap it up and do something. And here the Indians were on the outside. And what do we do? And so the boys, they obeyed Dad. And they had the advantage because the cabin was sitting in the middle of a clearing. And so the boys, you know, in the moonlight or however it was there, they could see the Indians. There was a couple of French and about 10 Indians, and they could see them. And so it would have been fairly easy to shoot these Indians to where they couldn't come to the house. But because Jacob said, no, boys, we can't do this. We have to follow the teachings of Jesus. They let the Indians just sneak up to the house, and they set the house on fire. And the family had to go to the basement. And they found themselves down there using cider that they had pressed out of apples to fight the fire. So they tried to douse the flames and it gave them relief and so on. But the Indians, finally the house was burned down so much they decided to leave. And they had left all except for one young Indian who was 18 years old. Stayed behind to eat some peaches that were still on the tree. And he saw the family crawl out of a hole from the basement. And immediately he shouted for his companions to come. And just soon they had them surrounded. And well, the first thing they did is they killed Mrs. Hostetler, Jacob's wife. They killed and scalped her. And then they killed the daughter that they had and also Jacob Jr., those three. They killed and scalped them. And what do you think was going through the boy's mind? Here we cannot defend ourselves. But anyway, after that, the Indians... One thing that did happen is Joseph, he ran away as hard as he could and several Indians after him, but he outran the Indians and got away. But he was so concerned about what is happening to the family that he sneaked around and hid behind a log to see what was going to happen. Well, while they were dealing with these killing and so on, and him hiding behind the log, one of the Indians noticed him. And several of them went out kind of acting like they didn't, you know, acting like they weren't really after him, but they got him circled and then they caught him too. But anyway, then they left with Jacob's family. They stopped by the peach tree where this Indian was eating the peaches and they filled their pockets with peaches. Jacob and his boys did. And then they went on. And then they traveled I think it was 3 days that they traveled. And as they were traveling, of course, you know how the Indians were back then. If you had a scalp dangling from your belt, that was a trophy. So here now was Jacob and Joseph and Christian that were left. And Jacob had said, no, we have to obey the commands of Jesus. And to see his wife's scalp for 3 days hanging from the belt of an Indian and the two boys as well. What do you think went through their minds? Here is my mom, my precious daughter, my sister, and our brother had to be killed just because we could not defend ourselves. But anyway, they went on to this certain village after 3 days. And usually when prisoners would come into an Indian camp like that, they would form a gauntlet, which was a whole row of of Indians on each side with sticks and clubs and whatever, and somebody had to run through there and see if he could get to the other end. And a lot of men did not make it. And so that is what they were fixing to do when Jacob reached into his pockets and he got some peaches out and he offered them to the chief. And the chief of the Indians was so impressed with this act of kindness that he gave the orders that they should not run the gauntlet. And so that was the first act that is recorded where it made a difference. Offering him food and kindness was returned. And as we think of this song, I'd like to sing a verse of 847. And in thinking of this horrible situation that they had, this song came to mind. I'd like to sing the first verse because I believe that that Jacob and the boys could have really related to this, the first verse in the warfare that is raging as they were traveling with these scalps hanging and so on and realizing what they had lost. In the warfare that is raging for the truth and for the right, when the conflict fierce is raging with the powers of the night, God needs people brave and true. Make he then depend on you. May the Lord depend on you. Loyalty depend on us when the going is tough like this. It had been reported that about a year or so earlier, a group of Indians that were tired and hungry had stopped by the Hostetler home and had asked for food. And that Mrs. Hostetler had turned them down. And it is a possibility that the Indians were holding a grudge because of that. But anyway, after they had came to that first village, they again traveled for 14 days, and they went northwest all the way to Erie, Pennsylvania, which is on the lake, on Lake Erie, I think. And that is where then they were sent to three different Indian villages to live. But Jacob, before he parted from the boys, I mean forcefully parted, he told the boys that if you are taken far, far away, and you are away from home for a long, long time, please don't forget the Lord's Prayer. In German. Of course, that was the language that they spake. But the boys did not forget that. But he said, don't forget the Lord's Prayer. Now, isn't it that there's times that us fathers can make an impression on our boys that they don't forget? But these are Bible principles. It should be in the heart of every dad and mother to instill real truths in the heart of our children that they will not forget. That is very important. And then anyway, after the separation, Jacob was taken to a certain village, and then he was, when the Indians would go away to fight, and he was the only man left in the village, and they made him responsible to bring in the game, go shoot deer and different things like that. He was given a gun and just a few bullets at a time to bring meat in for the village. But he managed to save a little bit of gunpowder and a few bullets each day because he was planning to try to escape. And he hid this stuff in a tree. But he did not know which way was home. For where he was, he did not know, as far as the traveling that they had done for 14 days, where is home? Which, you know, where would it be? And anyway, then an old man came to camp one day, and there was a pile of ashes there, and he kind of scattered them out a little bit and took a stick, and he started drawing something. And, of course, Jacob was interested in what this is, and he soon discovered it's a map. And because of how this man was drawing it, he figured out where he was. And so anyway, he watched his chance, and then eventually another man came to the camp that was also a prisoner. I think his name was John Speck, but he was also at the camp, and together they decided how they were going to escape. So one morning when they went out to hunt, they went out opposite directions to try to avoid detection of what their plans were, and then they were supposed to meet at a certain place, which I think was at this tree where the powder and the bullets were hid. And so they had their guns, and then they took off as fast as they dared. And the first night they came to a cliff, kind of an overhanging cliff, and they thought they'd build a fire under this cliff and thought they would not be detected. But anyway, they were there sitting by the fire and talking, but all of a sudden a lone Indian showed up. And they were like, what do we do now? Again, they had guns. But see, Jacob did not believe in using a gun. Here he had wanted to escape so long, and now they had made the escape, and here was a block right in their way. And how were they going to handle that? Well, anyway, they went and got some sticks and put on the fire, and they acted like they were feeding the fire, which they were. But they circled further and further outside away from the fire. And they had, because of their German language, the Indian couldn't understand them, and they had decided where they're going to meet. And anyway, as they circled around and circled around, finally they made a break for it, or Jacob did. But then John did not show up where they were supposed to meet. And so Jacob was left with, what do I do now? I'm here by myself. John did not meet me. So Jacob, being concerned for John, he sneaked back to the campfire, and when he looked there, the Indian was sitting there, and there was plenty of blood, and I think it was meat or something like that was around, that convinced Jacob that the Indian had killed John. And so he took off by himself to leave, and he traveled for 4 days, and then he came to a river, and he assumed it was Susquehanna River, and he followed it for several days, when he finally decided it's time to build a raft. But how do you build a raft? You don't have an axe. You don't have a way to cut logs. So he went and built the little fires, and he watched the fire all night long until it had burned some logs through. And then he took vines and lashed them together and pushed it out in the river, and he floated down the river. Then it was some days later when he was rescued. And, of course, told his story and so on. So now he went back home and met John and his daughter Barbara, his son John and Barbara, their married families. It was so good to be home, but where are the two boys? Where is Christian and Joseph? He did not know. But he kept looking for them and had his ears open to hear of anything that he could find to indicate that his boys were still okay. And at the time that this happened, Christian, I think, was 11 and Joseph was 15. So they were just young boys. And then, soon after that, the war ended. And one condition of the war was that all the captives needed to be returned home again. And where were Jacob's two boys? How could he find them? He thought he knew maybe where they were, but there is still the original letter that he wrote to the governor petitioning him to find the boys and bring them home. They still have that original letter of Jacob doing that, putting in a plea for his boys. And one day, Jacob, by the way, in the meantime, he had gotten married again, and he lived in what is Lebanon County, Pennsylvania today. And he was living there with his wife. And one day, an Indian showed up looking for food. And he was hungry. So Jacob gave him food, and he went outside and sat on a stump and was eating his food. When after a while, when Jacob was finished with what he was doing, he went out to visit with him. And he asked the Indian what his name was. And the Indian said, "Ich bin der Christian Hostetler." So it ended up being his son that he didn't recognize. So that certainly was a wonderful reunion. But then later, Joseph, they found him also, and he came home. So now Joseph and Christian were again united with the rest of the family. And according to the history, it's interesting that both of the boys, Christian and Joseph, they got married. Christian married a girl named Anna, and Joseph married a girl named Barbara. And both boys became members of non-resistant churches. So, with what they went through, the boys were hanging on to what Dad taught them. Joseph joined the Amish, and Christian became a preacher in the Dunkard Brethren, or what is today known as the German Baptists. So let's sing the second verse of this song. There are, of course, a lot of varied opinions about non-resistance today and so on, but we do want to instill in all of us that Jesus' way is the only way to truly live and be at peace in this warfare. See, they come on sable pinions, come in strong satanic might. Powers come and dark dominions from the regions of the night. God requires the brave and true. Interesting thing that happened then is there was an Indian whose name was Tom Lyons, and he moved to Holmes County Ahiah. And some of Jacob's grandchildren also moved to Holmes County, Ohio, when they were saying the story about what had happened to their dad and so on. And then Tom Lyons had a confession to make. He said that he was the young Indian. He was 18 years old at the time, but he was the one who scalped Mrs. Hosteller. And Tom was, of course, being brought up with the Indians. He was not a Christian man. And he hated the Europeans, or hated the French, because of how he felt they had misled them into believing that the Amish were bad people, and with what they had done. And he claimed that he had 99 tongues. Now let's watch how this man here was living his life so opposite from Jacob Hostetler. But he claimed that he had 99 human tongues dried and on a string to prove that he had killed 99 of these hated Europeans. And he said that if anybody messes with me or causes me any trouble, I'll have 100 on that string. So that was the kind of remarks and things that he was making, you know, to, you know, he had a lot of great of stories to tell, but as close as they could tell, they're not sure if everything was true that he said, but as close as they could tell, you know, he said things that made folks believe that he was the one who actually did this. And anyway, so now here, the grandchildren and this Tom Lyons were living in peace as neighbors. But he was not a happy man. He was lonely. And it was a few years later that he took his own life, committed suicide. And he was, I take it, the last Indian of his kind that lived in Holmes County. There were, of course, some in other places, but he was the last one. And he left no descendants. He did not have any children. He left no descendants. But today they're saying that the Jacob Hostetler descendants could well number up to 1 million. Could well number at least 500,000, and could be as many as 1 million. But you see now how the tables were so turned. The man who took Jacob's wife's scalp was a lonely, old, unhappy man who died with no descendants. And Jacob, the one who looked like the real loser back then, hanging on to what Jesus said, had all those descendants and boys who became steadfast in the beliefs of non-resistance. So that is what God can do. So in the times that we're living in, boys, it's not the biggest and the toughest guy, the one who can fight the most, that wins. In fact, he's the one that loses. And as we were going through this Beatitudes this morning, and for the way that Jacob went through this terrific trial, wouldn't he have been as poor in spirit? Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. Do you think he experienced that? Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. With maybe up to 1 million descendants. And he was this meek man and humble man. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. He showed that to the chief when he offered him food. But he was a merciful man in any situation. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And blessed are the peacemakers that shall be called the children of God. Jacob was a peacemaker. Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely. For my sake, rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great Is your reward in heaven? For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. To me, it just fitted so well with the story of Jacob Hostetler and his family, and how there could be times that it does not feel good to take a stand for Christ. But you know, when you have your eyes on the reward that we have in heaven, then the things of earth just don't matter near so much. But in the warfare that is raging, where do you stand today? Would we be faithful when there are such huge circumstances and obstacles in our way? Are we going to practice the poor in spirit and the meek and mourning? Because someday it will be turned to joy if we are faithful here to the sayings of Jesus and to Bible principles. And I have been looking at our Anabaptist history and some of the situations that were there, and how decisions were made 100 years ago that is affecting us today. If you look at our churches and you look where they have been and where they are and where it looks like they're going, there are some real things that have happened back there in history that today it is showing itself. So I think we would really do well to look at things back there and see how things are coming out with the decisions that we're making today for our people and for our children and for our grandchildren. Isn't that important? That's why God told the children of Israel to teach your children when you're sitting down, or when you've risen up, or wherever you are, look for opportunities to teach your children. And ours are now grown. But there's so many times I wish they were little yet, where I could tell them the Bible stories and just look at the Bible principles that is so needful to give to these little ones. That is so needful. Please take the time. It is certainly time well spent. Let's kneel to pray.